On this week's 51%, she was the bassist for the Go-Go's.
I want to be in a band with like-minded gals like myself. I wanted a sisterhood, and I found it. I got it. My dream came true. It was all I ever wanted.
We spend the show with Kathy Valentine, who's written a memoir and a soundtrack. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. Age 21, Kathy Valentine was in the iconic venue The Whiskey in Los Angeles when she met a guitarist from a then fledgling band called The Go-Go's. The band needed a bassist. Enter Valentine. The Go-Go's became the first multi-platinum selling all-female band to play instruments themselves, write their own songs, and have a number one album. Their debut album, Beauty and the Beat, spent 6 weeks at the top of the Billboard 200 and featured the hit songs We Got the Beat and Our Lips Are Sealed. For Valentine, the band's success was the fulfillment of a dream, but it's only part of her story. Now she's written All I Ever Wanted, a rock and roll memoir. It traces the path that took her from her childhood in Texas, where she all but raised herself, to the height of stardom, devastation after the collapse of the band that had come to define her, and the quest to regain her sense of self in the aftermath. The book, with its accompanying soundtrack, was released March 31st, but the COVID-19 crisis put the brakes on her ensuing book tour. She's been holding events virtually.
I was, at first I just kind of took it a little bit in stride. I'm kind of a stoic by nature, and I've kind of lived long enough to, you know, see so often how things we think are terrible, we look back and they kind of worked out okay. So you get that wisdom and experience with age. But I'll have to say the day that I looked at my calendar and saw that I was going to be getting on a plane, going to my first book festival as a published author, doing a cool thing at UPenn with a creative writing class, and all the appearances, 23 cities and bookstores with really cool partners, I had a good cry the other day. And, you know, it was a short cry, though. I look at my circumstances and how I'm impacted, and it seems like a blip compared to what so many people are going through in terms of losing their businesses and their livelihoods and their health. So, you know, when you look at the broad spectrum of how this is affecting us all, you know, I can sit home on the internet. I can try new things. I can try to get the word out. People do want to read books more. And so we'll see. Maybe it'll all turn out okay. I hope so. It's the momentum right after a book release is hard to capture. That happens kind of one time. So I'm doing my best. Thank you for asking.
Sure. What prompted you, Kathy, to write a memoir? I mean, why get it out in front of the public as opposed to just keeping a journal, or why not just write another song?
Well, I had, over the last, like, probably 5 to 10 years, I had been interested in writing. I've always loved words. And as a songwriter, I've always, you know, been into writing and poetry, and I've done essays. But I started taking college classes in the 90s and started going back to school more full time a few years ago. And I started realizing just in school, because I took creative writing, that I was a good writer. I knew that I was a good writer, but it really became evident when I'm doing essays and short stories. So I started thinking maybe it'd be nice to try to publish something. And here was my honest thought, was like, okay, if you write short stories or the great American novel, you are competing with all the literary geniuses of the world, the up-and-coming great writers. But if I write my story, I'm competing with no one. Only I can tell my story. And that was part of it. But also, I felt like I had a story to tell. I had been reading other memoirs, and I would think, this is interesting, this is cool, but hey, I've got one to tell too. So it was kind of a combination of being a smart move in terms of just having my first book be something only I could do, and hopefully show people, or show whatever, not people, but like just get it established that I could have a voice that resonated on the page.
Maybe you could walk us through, I know it's hard to do without reciting the entire memoir, I appreciate that, but kind of walk us through the story, if you will.
Sure. It's basically, I call it a coming of age rock and roll story. And music was such, like all of us, music was such an important key part of my life, always. It showed me when I was in circumstances that were difficult or painful or feeling ostracized and like a complete, like just not fitting in person. And people will read that. They'll read about a very unconventional childhood with a very different, maybe you would say dysfunctional, but I'll just say very unconventional relationship with my mom. I was very unparented, not guided, no boundaries, kind of just you go figure it out. Loved and supported, but no parenting whatsoever. So I was very confused and lost. I didn't have my dad in my life. Music saved me. Even after it was just my fun music, it was like what showed me that there was a world of outliers out there. You know, people like David Bowie and Mark Bolan, T-Rex, and all these bands kind of just showed me that there was a world out there where people that were different could be successful and be looked up to and exalted and celebrated. So there was that. But I know I'm getting this is not the elevator pitch, is it? but so I go from a very lost, confused adolescence to finding music. And that kind of takes me to wanting my dream, which is to make it in the music business. I want to be in a band, and I want to be in a band with like-minded gals like myself. I wanted a sisterhood, and I found it. I got it. My dream came true. It was all I ever wanted, and I got it and took it as far as you could possibly go with the Go-Go's. It was everything to me, and then lost it all. So then it's like picking up the pieces, facing all the pain and the betrayals and the heartache of life, everything, and having to find yourself again. So to make it shorter, lost, found, lost, found.
Okay, that's not the elevator pitch.
I know. It's like the five stories up the stairway pitch.
You mentioned, as you were just telling me this, like-minded in the band. Were you all like-minded in the Go-Go's? And what do you mean by that?
I mean that there's not that many women that, especially young girls, that want to start a band. They're just, especially in the 1970s, when I was 15, I thought I was the only girl in the world that wanted to start a band. And then I saw the Runaways, and they were my age, and I was like, oh, there's other girls out there that want to do this too. And let me just give credit to Suzy Quatro. You know, I had been strumming a guitar for about a year, but it never occurred to me that I could plug an electric guitar into an amp and rock out on stage like so many of my heroes in bands did. It was only in England when I saw Suzy on television, and it was a woman doing that I felt, it was like, I called the chapter earthquake. Everything changed. Everything became about that to me. And I did want to do it with women because I just wanted to see women at the top, the pantheon of great bands that I loved. I didn't see any women doing it. I saw singers, I saw folk singers, I saw front people, but I didn't see musicians. And I just wanted that. It was a longing, you know, that never, ever went away. So by the time I got in the Go-Go's, I was just so thrilled to find, we were so driven, we were so ambitious, you know, we were just ready to take on the world and did it.
So obviously the higher you go, the longer the fall. So the collapse, as you said, was devastating. What was the collapse?
Well, it was a lot of things. There's not any one factor, but I can say that I think the first thing that started to make it crack was, you know, Jane Wiedlin left the band after our third album, Talk Show, came out. And she did that last tour. And by that time, this band was everything to me. Not only was it the fulfillment of my dream, but it was the way I could make my way through the world and take care of myself. And I knew no one was going to take care of me. I had to do that. And this was a way that I could do something I loved and still pay the bills and kind of have a blast at it at the same time. So I wasn't going to let anything, if I could help it, stop that. So Jane leaving changed the entire chemistry of the band, but I refused to let anything, get in the way. I was like, one in a million gets to this point. But that was the beginning. And she left because it had gotten to a point where we were squabbling about things that were, you know, unfortunate band things. Every business has its pitfalls. And something with us was songwriting and credit and some people making more money and some people not. And there was that. There was drugs and alcohol. There was the exhaustion of just working all the time and never really knowing that you could say no, because you feel like this is your shot. You don't, when somebody says you're going to do this and this and this and this, it doesn't occur to you to say, oh no, we need a day off, you know? So we were exhausted. It wasn't as much fun. A lot of things took their toll. Our manager that had been with us since day one had left, and we were with more type corporate type people that maybe didn't understand us or know what kind of vulnerable and frail position we'd gotten ourselves in. So maybe if we'd been guided, it would have been different. I don't know. It's just everything.
Yeah, it's usually a little of everything or a lot of everything. And when you look back, here we are in the Me Too era, time's up. Do you look at how you were treated by men in the industry? I mean, do you look at that treatment differently now?
Well, I can't say that we were ever, we were never like told, you know, that we were never like sexually like pushed. Like nobody was like, hey, you know, put out and I'll put you on the playlist. You know, it wasn't anything like that ever. But there were gatekeepers that were pretty much all men. Most of the radio programmers and most of the DJs, most of the journalists, the record company people, they were men, and they were the ones that were the biggest obstacles. And starting from record companies saying, oh, we're not going to sign this band. Yeah, they're popular, but there's never been a successful all-female band, so we're going to pass. There was that stuff. We had to tour for 9 months. 9 months we went around and around and around playing and playing and getting more and more popular before our first single, Our Lips Are Sealed, broke into the top 30. And that's resistance. You know, that is resistance. When a band is that up and coming and doing so well, MTV played a huge part because they put us in people's living rooms and people could see something that was different and new and fresh and exciting. I have to say, I write about this in my book, the people that were, in terms of gender stuff, men, musicians, were so supportive. I have found that throughout my career, that whether it was the police celebrating us and having us on the road and celebrating when our album went past theirs, to when I was first starting out and looking up to all the musicians in Austin that I looked up to, that helped me and supported me. So men musicians were always supportive, and it was the gatekeepers that were the obstacles. But we didn't encounter, at least I didn't, and not that I know of, any kind of like tit for tat sexual favor type stuff. Thank God. We probably would have laughed. We probably would have laughed and been, you know, highly amused at someone would even think such a thing.
So with the success of the Go-Go's, when you also look back, is there a song that you think, oh, I can't believe everybody loved this song, or vice versa? Is there a song you love that didn't rage in popularity?
My only regret is on the first album, we released Our Lips Are Sealed, and then we got the beat, and the album went to number one, and the smartest thing to do would have been to keep touring and release another single, another two singles. It would have really helped our longevity. It would have helped break the band in other markets. But we were so like, no, we're tired of these songs. We want to make a new record. My biggest regret is, I mean, I see why the hits were hits. They were great songs. I heard it on the first cassette I listened to, and I hear it on the radio today. These are great songs that are classic. They transcend era. They don't sound like the 80s. They just sound like good songs. But I do regret that we weren't smart enough to release more singles from the first album, because that first album, there's not a clinker in the batch. You know, that is a classic debut album, and it could have been worked a lot more thoroughly.
Who am I? But I have to agree with you. Now, I'm going to wear my fangirl hat. when I knew we were setting up this interview, I was kind of thrilled, not only because you're a female bassist, and as you said back then, who was doing that as a woman, and that's exciting in itself, but you brought me right back in this pretty dark time, back to high school, to a carefree place. I was running to friends' houses to watch the latest MTV videos after school. I think I told you before the interview, you were on the cassette deck in my friend's brown VW Rabbit as we headed down to the Jersey Shore, singing at the top of our lungs. So it's almost dissonant for me to hear of a collapse of one of the members of the band, but so encouraging, of course, to hear the collapse wasn't permanent. What do you want people to take away from your memoir? Readers, of course, will take away different things, but what are you hoping people latch onto?
Well, one of the things I've really enjoyed from that I've heard from people that have read it is how many aspects of the story resonate with people, and not just for just the human stuff before the band, after the band, the resilience, the feeling lost, the wondering if you were just lucky and didn't have the talent that you needed. Those are human things. I really like hearing how people are connecting with different parts. It's a journey. But I've also had a number of people tell me that there's so much for any musician to learn from this, because some things, the music business is very different than it was when we were successful, but some things are the same. And we were very, very true to ourselves. We believed in ourselves. I think I was really grateful every step of the way for what was happening. You know, I didn't know when we were making an album that it was going to be a number one album, but I did know that I was 22 years old in New York City, having the time of my life, doing something that I couldn't have even thought was possible. And I, every minute of, that's one thing I'm happy about. As I wrote the book and relived everything, I was so happy to relive the joy of making Beauty and the Beat. And I wrote that I think the joy that we had doing it kind of seeped onto the tape as well. I think there's more to it than the songs. There was everything happening. I hope that people take away that you can make mistakes, you can be lost, you can get in pretty bad situations, and like I did when I was younger, and yet you can still have success and be loved and love people and go on and have success and get through it. You know, I think that's just something that my daughter said, why would you want people to know this stuff? You know? And I was like, well, people, it's important that they know that things can go really wrong or really bad, or you can lose everything and still come out the other side.
How are you informed by your music today?
Well, music for me, and relating to what you said about like how it took you back, just thinking about driving down to the coast, one thing I did when I wrote this book, in fact, the first thing I did was I went back year. This book goes, it's a slice of life. You know, memoir is not an autobiography. This goes from 1970 to 1990. And I started with each year and made a playlist of all my favorite songs and what was on the radio and what was the soundtrack to the movies I liked. And I made these playlists. And before I started writing, I would put that music on and it would take me back. And everybody knows, oh, that song takes me back. We all say that. But it's such a cool thing to look back at, you know, times of your life. Like, what was I listening to when I was 14? And those playlists put me so into the feelings of where I was that it really helped me write from a place. Like, I felt like it was 16-year-old me writing when I wrote. And I felt like it was 17-year-old me writing and 12-year-old me. And music is what helped get me back there. So I wanted to say that. But also, over the years, and I write about this, when I was lonely and I first moved to L.A., is when I wrote Can't Stop the World and We Don't Get Along. These ended up on Go-Go's records. A year later, I wrote Vacation. This was when I learned that songwriting was probably the best friend I was going to ever have, because it was always going to give me a way to process either what's happening around me externally or what's happening inside me internally. And it's so, I mean, I've had times where I'm like just in such sorrow and pain, and I just force myself to pull out my guitar and my notebook and I start writing and I get in the moment of what I'm doing. And the next thing I know, I've written something beautiful or maybe something painful. I have songs that no one will ever hear, because they were written for the express purpose as therapy to help me process the feelings.
What's next for you?
I loved writing this book, and I loved doing the soundtrack. I thought it was such an interesting and creative and innovative idea. I'm just patting myself all over the back over here, because here I am. I've written a book, and yet I'm a composer. I'm a songwriter and a musician. I've been doing that for decades. I've been playing guitar for decades, much more than playing bass in the Go-Go's. I have been in bands nonstop for 45 years, writing songs, playing my instruments. And it's such a part of me that when I wrote this book, I thought, I want to explore this musically. So I put a soundtrack to the book, and it was so creative and fun and the best thing I've ever done musically, in terms of just really enjoying myself and pushing myself and being able to try whatever I wanted to try. I'm so interested in this concept of intersecting storytelling with music that I would like to do more. I would like to write a book, a collection of short stories with a soundtrack that accompanies them. I would like to write two more nonfiction books that I have in mind. I'd like to write a novel. I'd like to write a sequel to my memoir, because like I said, that stops in 1990. And there's so much more to this story. And hopefully people will read this book and say, I like this writer. I want to read more from her. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, you have no ambition, Kathy. Zero. I just want to go back in time.
And well, you know what, Allison? That is part of my message. That is part of the message I want to say. I'm 61 years old, and I am so fired up and enthusiastic and excited. And I still feel like I did when I was 25 or 21, not as dumb, but it's like, you know, we don't have to stop just because our youth isn't what it was, or our looks aren't what they were. As women, I think it's just so, so valuable and an important message to put across, that, you know, I've never been in the spotlight. I always wanted to be Keith Richards. I just wanted to be in the band, writing songs, you know, being the cool chick in the cool band. And now, writing a book, I'm in the spotlight, and it's new and it's scary, but it's also exhilarating. And I think that's just so important, that we just keep doing new things and new challenges. So that is something I wanted to just acknowledge, that, you know, it's something that women need to hear, that because our lives, we have to kind of find ourselves in the world again as we hit our 50s and 60s, whether it's because your kids have gone out to college, or maybe you get a divorce, or maybe you get out of your job and a new kind of guard comes in. We have to find our place in the world again. And the way to do it is by following, you know, those dreams a little bit, those little threads, maybe not even a dream, but a little thread that just kind of keeps tugging at you.
Right. It's not always the same placemat at the same table. You have to move around and do different things, but
that's perfect. Yes.
What else is in your band history?
I've played guitar in bands. The Go-Go's is the only band I ever played bass in. I was in four bands before the Go-Go's. One of them was a fledgling version of Girls' School in London. I have never not been in a band for 45 years, and all my band, the Go-Go's is the only successful one that people know, you know, your average person knows about, but all of my bands have been super cool. I mean, really good players. I'm in a band in Austin called the Blue Bonnets, a rock and roll band, all women, kick ass, great band. So I just like it. I like playing music. When I'm up there on stage, or even if I'm just in the rehearsal room, when I'm playing music, I'm not thinking. It's just, I'm in the moment, and there's just nothing like it. So it's something I truly love and probably will do until I'm physically unable to.
Sounds like it. And who do you admire today in the music business?
Well, it's interesting. My daughter and my boyfriend have both turned me on to hip hop, and I'm like discovering 40 years of hip hop, and I'm just really liking it. A similar thing happened in the 90s when all this new kind of wave of grunge was happening. I was discovering jazz. So while everybody else is like all excited about Soundgarden and Pearl Jam and Nirvana, I'm like getting excited about Miles Davis and Coltrane and Monk. So sometimes I just get turned on to a whole genre of music. And that's what's so special about music, is that it's just relevant anyway. And now I might like hear stuff from the 90s and go, oh, that's cool. What is that? And it's like, oh, that's Sublime. Oh, I miss that. So it's kind of fun just to keep discovering music. I will say that, so I like hip hop. I really am enjoying, you know, everything from, I don't know, Chance the Rapper, Tyler the Creator, Frank Ocean, Kendrick Lamar, enjoying discovering all that and the earlier stuff. But also, I really like this band from Canada called The Beaches. They remind me of the Go-Go's when we were first starting out. They're just having the time of their life. They're great musicians. They're young. They're just going for it. I love them. My daughter turned me on to Billie Eilish years and years ago when she first put out her first song, and I thought she was, I was not surprised when she became a star. I was like, this is really different and it's really good. So I like a lot of stuff. I don't know if I have a hero so much. I still discover old things. I still go back and revisit, you know, Patti Smith records, or just like, there's just so much music to dive into all the time. Who has time, right?
Absolutely. Super cool. So does this mean you'll redo Vacation in hip hop or something?
I've thought of it, you know, I've thought of it. I actually tried it and it didn't quite go like I thought, but I have thought of it because I don't know. I just could hear it with this cool rap in the middle. I think it'd be awesome.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Wouldn't it be cool? Like if I could get Chance to do a rap in the middle of Vacation, that would be like, not only would I like be like Godhead to my daughter for life, but it would just be super cool.
Yeah, it would. Kathy, thank you so much for spending the time you did with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for giving me a platform to talk about my book. I'm super proud of it. And the music's really cool too, that goes with it.
Kathy Valentine's book is All I Ever Wanted, a rock and roll memoir. It has a soundtrack that includes her song, Just Do It. Someone's supposed to protect the young. Just do it. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Tina Rennick for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1610.